Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the Theatrical Musting Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Woodzik, and our first guest for the first ever episode, so exciting, is Sheila Weidendorf. I consider Sheila to be a true Renaissance woman. She's an incredible musician and very intelligent and funny and one of my favorite people, and so there's no better person to kick off this whole crazy podcast thing. Sheila has several concerts coming up with her group, Island Consort, and the most upcoming one, the most immediate one, is going to be this Sunday, March 1st at 2 p.m. at Whidbey Island Center for the Arts. You can check out all the goings-on with that concert and other ones coming up at islandconsort.org. And there's a little Contact Us tab, and if you click on that, you can get on Sheila's email list, her newsletter. So, hey, we have a sponsor, our first sponsor. That's exciting, too. This episode is sponsored by Second Street Hair Boutique. Located in the heart of Langley, Second Street Hair Boutique offers professional salon services, including cuts, colors, highlights, and extensions. Learn more by visiting secondstreethairboutique.com. And second starts with the number 2, ND, instead of spelling out the word second. And the owner is Bristol Branson, and I've gotten my hair done there for years, and so if you're looking for a place to get your hair done, you should check that out. So anyway, enough of this intro. Let's get to the first interview with Sheila Weidendorf. Enjoy. Okay. Recording. So my guest today on this first podcast, Theatrical Mustang Podcast, Interviews with Unbridled Talent, is Sheila Weidendorf. And hello, Sheila. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Katie. Hello.
So you are sort of like a mainstay in Island. You're like one of the Island's top accompanists. You've done a ton of musicals, and you're just a well-known name. What originally brought you to Whidbey Island?
Karma.
Karma.
Yes. It was just a magical trajectory that caused me to really leave everything behind in Minnesota and come here for inexplicable reasons, other than it was an internal mandate, a choiceless choice.
A choiceless choice.
Yes, very much so.
And you work at the Whidbey Island Waldorf School?
I work half-time at Whidbey Island Waldorf School in admissions.
Excellent. So where did your journey with music sort of begin? Was it predominant in your childhood?
My mother and my father divorced when I was a baby. She remarried when I was 5 or 6. And so as part of that marriage, I got a new grandmother who played the piano. And I knew her for a year before she died of breast cancer. And when I would be at her house, she would play the piano, I'd sit on the bench, and we'd sing old songs from the 1910s and 20s and 30s and such. So after she passed, I inherited this upright grand, a Cable Wellington upright grand, the family had purchased in, I think, 1914 for $200, which was quite a king's ransom.
Wow.
My stepfather still has the original receipt. And that piano is with my older daughter in Minneapolis right now. I haven't shipped it out here yet. So I started playing by ear. I was just fascinated with the piano. And so I would hear things on the radio and just play them. And my mother's mother was visiting and asked my mother, when did Sheila start taking lessons? To which my mother responded, she doesn't take lessons. To which my grandmother responded, get her into lessons, I'll pay for them. So I started piano lessons at the age of about 9, and I just couldn't get enough. So by the age of 13, I was very devoted as a classical pianist. And so all of my, I studied pipe organ officially and voice and tenor saxophone. So music was really my thing by the age of about 10. But piano was always my greatest love. And so I did go off to music school to study piano.
And where did you study?
I started at Concordia and Moorhead in northern Minnesota to study with a particular pianist, David Wirth. And then I transferred to the University of Minnesota School of Music in my sophomore year and studied with Duncan McNabb.
But you didn't only study music in your sort of post-high school studies, right? You also mm-hmm. have some, what other things did you study?
Well, in college, I mean, piano was really the thing, but I had had some early trauma and injury, so I had some pretty serious bouts with pain, so I'd have to take time off from the piano occasionally, which was very distressing. And in my undergraduate years, I had taken a very keen interest in cultural anthropology and could have had a double major, though I never declared it. And so at one point, when I thought I wouldn't play the piano because I was hurting so bad, when I first transferred to the School of Music at the University of Minnesota, I believed I'd be taking up ethnomusicology with a focus on Indian music, like traditional Hindustani and other music. But then I couldn't stay away from the piano, so I went back. But then I did, at one point in my junior year, I was preparing for a big performance, and my hands literally went numb. I had no feeling in my hands for quite some time, and when it came back, I hurt like bloody hell, actually. So for a year of my life, I don't really even know what I did, because I didn't do anything. I don't know how I lived. I almost don't remember it, other than it was really miserable. And then when I kind of recovered enough to go forward, I finished my degree in music, mm-hmm. And then went on to study feminist theology in graduate school.
Did you find that there was any intersection between, well, obviously hymns and whatnot, but between the music and the feminist theology?
Well, I'm not a Christian, although I did participate in the Christian traditions in a very progressive way. For quite some time, I was a liturgical director at a very progressive church in Minneapolis and played pipe organ and did music series there. I did return to the piano for a while, and then I started having children, and then it kind of waned as I got busier. But music for me is about the highest holy truth in the cosmos, that really channeling forms of resonance into the human consciousness that create worlds. And my studies in feminist theology were more of a mystical nature. I'm very interested in blood mysteries and themes of sacrifice and rebirth. And so they take different forms in the world, but everything for me is really about the same thing, ultimately, which is our truth as consciousness on the planet.
Fascinating. Fascinating. You are this, like, quintessential Renaissance woman to me, and I am in awe of you. So let's talk about Island Consort. How did that come to be?
Well, I have to back up a little bit. I've been on the island almost five, it'll be 5 years in March. And about 2 years before I moved here, I had taken up the piano again. I had at one point thought I would never be able to play again at any level. I mean, I could pluck out children's stones, but you know, I couldn't just toss off a Chopin scherzo after not having played for 15 years. So I was quite disheartened at one point, and I just locked it away as though it never was. And I really almost forgot that I had been a pianist and that it had actually been kind of my reason for living, which sounds weird, but that's, I think, how I just dealt with things. If I couldn't do anything about it, I just went on and did what next thing I was going to do. But about 2 years before I moved here, at my daughter's previous Waldorf school in Minneapolis, there was a big conference, and there's a movement form in Waldorf called Eurythmy, which is a way of making truth visible through the body. So Eurythmy is done to music, either classical music or music written for the form, or to poetry. It's making resonant truth visible in that way. And I was at a conference at the school, and the eurythmist was doing a workshop, and whoever the pianist was going to be got sick and couldn't be there. So no one at the school had ever heard me play a note, but someone had talked to me and knew that at some point in my past I had been a pianist, and a classical pianist. And they said, well, can you sight read? And it just so happens I have kind of actually epic sight reading superpowers for no explainable reason. But I said, yes, I can sight read, and yes, I did play. And they said, well, would you play for this conference? And I really had this flush of almost like revealing a deep, dark, dirty secret, which is weird. I play the piano. How bad can that be? Right. But because I had it so locked away that it was a really big deal to me to confess publicly that this was a part of me. So I went, and 5 minutes later was playing for this conference, and lo and behold, I could play pretty amazingly after not having really played at all. And then our school there reinstated its Eurythmy program. So for 2 years, I played for my school's movement program and then would play other things. There was a teacher who would write a play and want a soundtrack to be Rachmaninoff and you know, Brahms or whatever. So I was playing in public at the school only. And I thought that's where it would lay. But it really unlocked this musical part of my life, which had been really suppressed. Mm. And interestingly, for all the years that I wasn't playing, I was in almost constant physical pain. And it's really no surprise now, in hindsight, of what was being sort of kept at bay. But it really unleashed this sort of original passion that I have. And so I was starting to stay up late at night practicing. But this time I had 5 children and an extra one living with me. And so my children now range in age from 10 to 27. So then it was, 6 years ago, that would have been 4 to, do the math, 4 to 21. And so my life was a little bit of a circus. So I'd get up early and get the first round off to college or high school and take the kids to school, do some work, come home, do my independent projects, homeschool one of them, nurse the baby, pick up one child, take it from high school to college, nurse the baby, do my things. I was a caterer at the time, so I would often be cooking. And then the little girls would go to bed early, and then the high school students, can you read my paper? And then the college students would come by, and then my older son would come home after a gig because he's a drummer. So, I would be up till 2 in the morning and up at 6 in the morning, but I would stay up and practice. I would just play piano at night and regain what I thought was really lost forever. And I would cry. I would just sob, literally. I would just play, and I could not believe I was playing. I couldn't believe that it was even in me, and I couldn't believe that I ever lived without it for so many years. At one point, when I first had the loss, when my hands had gone numb, I mean, my life really did fall apart for a year. I just didn't know what to do. I was very intelligent, and I could have pursued any degree, but I didn't want to. I had been a musician. And in that time, I was sort of the wandering in the desert years. During that time, I was assaulted and really almost died. And that's a whole new series of physical challenges. So there was just a lot I was chewing on in the years I wasn't making music. And so a big fundamental piece of that was loss of identity.
Mm.
And of course, the beauty of it, on the other hand, I realized that if I had pursued my original plan of being a concert pianist, I wouldn't have the children I have. I couldn't imagine having this brood. And all the other things I did in the meantime were also great blessings and gifts to me. So I was an herbalist and a sacred garden designer and an editor and a writer and a caterer and found my way. But this return to music was epically transformative. And so I would stay up at night practicing and crying, and just all these memories of all that I had done would flood me. And I knew that something was happening that I couldn't quite fathom intellectually. So 5 years ago, I'd come to this island to visit friends and do some training and healing work that I do. And I had this pronounced feeling that I lived here. It wasn't a feeling of I want to live here. It was very beautiful. I'd been here before 26 years ago. I have relatives on the island, and I had been out here with my oldest son, was less than a year old. So there was nothing not to love about it, but I was not seeking to upend the apple cart of my life and leave children and leave a marriage and leave a house that I owned and leave work to move 1,800 miles across the country for no apparent reason, but yet that's exactly what I did. So my youngest 2 children and I moved out here. My other children were all adults and on their own, so there was an opportunity. But it was that thing of choiceless choice. And what I did not have any idea about and could not have foreseen is that since moving to this island, there has been not only a full recovery of my pianistic capacities, but an expansion to an extent that I could not ever have foreseen and that I still cannot explain. So about a year into being here, I came here. I was also the movement pianist for our current Waldorf school. So that was part of my deal when I moved and took my position at the school. And then I just started playing for things, and I auditioned and joined Whibby Chamber Singers as a soprano. And on my audition form, it stated that I had been a pianist. So about, I think it must be 4 years ago now, the director of that group, Robert Prosh, had another choir who was about to have a performance, and their pianist was injured. So 2 days before the performance, he called me and said, I hear you had played piano. We have a dress rehearsal tonight. Can you come? Can you sight read? That age-old question. I was like, yes, I can sight read. So I showed up and sight read a dress rehearsal to great success, and then performed with him 2 days later. And then suddenly I was a pianist again. And 2 weeks later, he and I did a concert, and then I haven't stopped. So I started accidentally doing musical direction for musicals at Wicca and in Outcast and at the school. Again, sort of I can't really explain that, but there we go. And all the while, I was practicing and playing, then creating chamber music concerts, and, I've been playing kind of a ridiculous amount in the last few years. So in the midst of all that, I happen to love early music. music of the Renaissance and Baroque. Now, the piano didn't exist in the Renaissance or the Baroque. And by the late Renaissance, there were the clavecin and the early harpsichords. Later on, there was the forte piano in the early classical period. But the piano, as we know it, is a romantic instrument. And so, of course, all pianists learn, if you're a serious classical pianist, you learn Bach, and which translates beautifully to the modern piano. And but that's its own category of genius and wizardry right there. So in terms of the rest of the Renaissance and Baroque repertoire, you know, the pianists don't play it because it didn't exist. But I love it, and I'm also kind of selfish. So I had heard a concert of, we'd be on the Musical Festival, Tecla Cunningham's group that comes here and does concerts. And I don't remember which concert, but there was a beautiful, the whole program was lovely. There was a theorbist that was quite impressive. I think it was Stephen Stubbs playing, and a singer who sang Monteverdi. I also happen to love Elizabethan vocal music. And I have all these musicians that by then I was working with and creating concerts with. And I knew that a couple of them either loved early music, and one of them at least was making early music on the mainland. And I thought to myself, well, why aren't we making that music here? We would be residents. There's so many musicians here. And so really sparked by what I knew about my friends and my own personal love of early music, and then the inspiration of this concert, I had this feeling that I get when I know something has to happen. It was the same feeling that I got when I knew I was going to move here, and then 6 months later I was here. I had this feeling, and I kept checking in, and like, yes, this is going to happen. So I went to my friends and said, well, if I started an early music ensemble, oh, let's say Island Consort, are you in? And I'm impulsive. So if I think something is right and in my capacity to do it, I'm going to do it. There's really no question. It's not just a matter of when and how. It's not a question of if. But what was a notable sign to me about the rightness of this project was that a couple of my more reserved and sensible musician friends immediately in uproars, they said, yes. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And then someone gave me a harpsichord, because that happens every day. That was another sign. So it took me about a year and a half to gather musicians and to gather a vision for the group. But then my early music ensemble launched in October of 2013. We did several concerts last year. We just had our second concert of this season this past Sunday, as a matter of fact. And we play predominantly Renaissance and Baroque music. I'm using some of my consort friends this coming Sunday to play a concert at Wicca, which is mostly classical era music, although we're also going to include Bach because I can't not. So the consort began out of a confluence of impulses that existed, I believe, and then my own selfish interest in wanting to play the music, and having studied organ, and I had played harpsichord a little bit early on, but I would not have called myself a harpsichordist. The touch is very different in the action than a piano, but organ translates much more readily than the piano. So now I get to play all three. Yay.
Do you think there's a connection when you feel this intuition almost of a project being right or a place being right? Do you think that practicing as a musician or an artist of any type kind of helps people get in touch with that inner voice?
I would hope so. Now, it doesn't have to. So, for example, if you're going to listen to a pianist play Bach, you can have a pianist play all the right notes at the right times, which is a little Bachism, actually, and it won't be music. Or because Bach wrote with an endless stream of notes, it can sound mechanical. It shouldn't, because it's not. But one can certainly play anything at that level, technically correct, but without music, without the high holy truth that's inherent in the music. So I could practice till the cows come home and not be a musician. I could be a technician without being a musician. And if we're going to be in service to the music or in service to anything that we're going to do, it doesn't matter what the modality is or what the expression is, but if we're going to be in true service, it seems to me that the point is to go as deeply as we can into ourselves, which is the medium through which we're going to connect to the high holy truth of the thing it is that we're immersing ourselves in. Otherwise, I don't understand the point of doing it. Then it's just monkey work. So there's no point in me sitting at my piano for hours a day doing scale exercises if I'm not going to translate it into being in service to Bach or Mozart or Liszt or whomever I'm playing. Mm. So there's always a connection to me between music and quote-unquote real life. It is the greatest vehicle for me of experiencing life and my part in it. But again, the quality of the practice is commensurate with the quality of the intent of the practitioner and the capacity to open up. And that requires, I think, going deep. I don't know how to do it otherwise. That may just be idiosyncratic. So I don't want to sound in any way judgmental of another person's mechanism or means of getting at a thing.
So out of your five children, how many of them are musicians? Or
they all make music.
All of them, to some
all
extent.
All of them make music. My oldest is a drummer, and he's in four very serious bands in Minneapolis and records and performs and tours. So he is a musician. My second child can play piano and flute and sing a little and enjoys it, but has no interest in bringing too much form to the function. Mm. My third child is a guitarist and very serious about it, also writes. Isn't quite as driven as my oldest, but is actually probably genius in his intellect and his capacities. And so when he found the guitar, it was overnight, literally went from having no interest in music to suddenly wanting to play the guitar to shredding. And he has his own trajectory of how he expresses in the world. But and then my two youngest, who are here with me, now, and they're both, these two are both fully Waldorf educated, and in Waldorf education, music is part and parcel of the curriculum from an early age. So just as part of that, they've learned, you know, diatonic and pentatonic flutes and string instruments, and they sing all along. So the penultimate progeny sings actually in a very good ensemble at her Waldorf High School now, and plays the silver flute and has taken other instruments. And my youngest has, she's studying violin right now, but I think really her instrument is her voice. She's potentially destined for Broadway if she has her druthers. Yeah.
That's fantastic. What do you think, what is it about the early music that, what draws you to it?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, in the Renaissance is different than the Baroque, and the Baroque has stages, and so there's maybe not one thing, but I guess there tends to be maybe a streak of melancholy, of plaintiveness in the music. There's a purity of sound, and yet there's this amazing sophistication. The music is not easy to perform. My Island Concert has two divisions, an instrumental and a vocal division. So there's some 26 of us all together in the consort. And sometimes the vocal group, the Island Concert singers, will sing unaccompanied pieces. So we just sang a Thorbeau Pavane in French and then a Monteverdi madrigal. And Monteverdi is vast in his compositions, but he's so genius. And this is later Renaissance polyphony, and you have the layering of themes and voices. So there's this seamlessness on one hand, but this intricate inner working on the other hand, and it's so amazingly expressive of the human condition. And then Baroque music, I mean, it runs the gamut. The earlier Baroque coming out of that late Renaissance polyphony is different than later Bach, for example, who is God. I don't know how else to say that. If there is God, it is Bach. Not only Bach, but the older I get, the more I feel like I could devote myself completely to just studying Bach. There are so many notes, but if one only looks at it that way, one misses the boat. So this Baroque period, there's a lot of passion. There's a lot of, there's an elegance. There's an elegance and a passion, but also this undertow of exquisite human expression. Now, every era has its genius, and so I can't say that I love early music more than I love the classical era, than I love the romantic era. I happen to adore 20th century classical music and experimental music. So there's nothing I don't love, actually. And as a pianist, I played an awful lot of, you know, bigger, showier romantic era works, but increasingly, right now I'm playing a lot of Bach and Mozart. Who knew? I'm going back to these pure forms and finding sort of the secrets, unlocking the codes that make everything make sense. So I can't completely explain that. But I know that if I'm in my car listening to classical King FM, which I always do, I particularly perk up if I hear a harpsichord and a string orchestra playing a Foch trumpet concerto or something from the Baroque era. I don't know exactly how to explain this passion I have. And I'm certainly no early music expert. So in a way, I have this constant feeling of, like, who the hell was I to start an early music ensemble? I didn't make music for 15 years, not publicly for 20. I'm not an early music specialist, but I am ballsy. I'll give myself that. And again, there was an impulse within the consort that made it right. Everyone who I asked overwhelmingly wanted to be a part of it. And we have a devoted following in our audience members. Another sign, I think, that this music is so everlasting and eternal that it touches something in people. And you don't have to know a thing about music to love it.
That's beautifully said. So when you're putting together the music for a concert, how do you select the music? Do you do it by yourself or in tandem with other members of the consort?
It's a big mix, actually. So now if I'm doing, I have my own chamber music series. So for example, this concert I'm doing this coming Sunday at Wicca is part of a chamber music series we've started there. Last year I did 3 concerts there. This year I'm doing 2 concerts, and then my friend Mark Finley did one. So for those concerts, I mean, they're more me-driven, but yes and no, I guess. For Island Consort, I have an associate director, Chris Harshman, who most people know as a local award-winning jazz band director. He and I are a lot of trouble together because we both say yes to everything. We get very excited and think, sure, we can do it all. Why not? Which makes the vocal conductor very nervous because she's got a lot more sense in her head than either Chris or I do. So the vocal consort's repertoire is predominantly selected by our vocal conductor, Diane Vars, although I have ultimate yay or nay rights as the artistic director of the entire consort. And then for the instrumentalists, Chris and I predominantly plot and spin and choose music, but any consortist can come forward and say, hey, I want to do this. So Island Consort has a concert on April 26th at St. Augustine's in the Woods. It's a Bach-centric concert. We're also doing elements of the Italian Baroque. So Chris and I knew we wanted to do an orchestral suite with the full instrumental ensemble. And then which one can we do? Because we're a small group. And so we have to do music that we can do with the numbers that we have and do it justice. So for that concert, we have a Baroque trumpet player in our consort. The valveless Baroque trumpet is quite an amazing feat to pull off. And we are importing 2 of his Baroque trumpet playing buddies from the mainland, actually, so we can do Bach's Orchestral Suite number 3, which is kind of a big deal. We're also going to do the Bach's Musical Offering, which is crazy genius. And we haven't even decided the instrumentation we're going to use yet. And this is something I had heard it. I was listening, and I thought, oh my goodness, it just struck me one day. And so I suggested it, and we're going to do it. My oboe player, my oboist friend, this Kenny, loves Albinoni, and she said, I'd love to do an Albinoni oboe concerto. I said, sure, fine, we're doing this one on this concert. So anyone can suggest something, and then ultimately I will decide if it's going to go on the program and when it's going to go on a program. But we're also planning way ahead. So right now I'm working on next year's season and beyond for events that are consort related. We're looking at potential collaborations with Island Shakespeare to do maybe something such as Purcell's Fairy Queen down the road, which would be, if this happens, it would be directed by Rose Woods as a theatrical production, and Island Consort players would provide the musical backdrop. You know, that's not set in stone yet. We'll probably at some point do, for example, a Renaissance Madrigal Dinner as a fundraiser where we would teach Renaissance and Baroque dance forms with a specialist there in costume. So all kinds of things are in the works for down the road. So between Chris and Diane and I, the music is decided. But anyone in the instrumental division at least can suggest things that they have within their preview. Then it's a matter of music availability and, again, what we can do with the numbers that we have.
Can you speak a little bit more to the positive audience response that you've had and what you've learned that this music means to this community?
Well, there's a couple streams of this. One is, you know, for reasons I don't completely understand, I do seem to have super fans, and it always takes me by surprise because I have a very, very, very public life at this point. I do play piano a lot. I mean, I do collaborative work, and I give these chamber concerts, again, for no apparent reason. And and I've done the musicals, so people know me as a pianist. And so I have people that just come to anything that I do. And it always takes me by surprise, because when I'm not out there making the music, I'm such a hermit in the woods, it's not even funny. People do not understand to what extent I am a hermit and extraordinarily introverted. And no one believes me because I have such a public life. And I'm not shy, and I've always held a lot of space publicly for various projects. So I'm comfortable in that zone, but it's not where I really live. I live in the woods on an island for a reason. And so I'm always a little surprised by the fact that people seem to really dig what I'm doing. Plus, I'm only just catching up to the fact that I'm doing it. So I'm still in sort of shock and awe every day that I'm making music. So it's sort of a, where'd that come from experience every day of my life. And then the consort, we have super fans. We have groupies that will come to every concert and actually quiver with excitement when they see me or us, which is like, I can't quite explain that. Although I can, because that's how I feel. I mean, I cry every time my music is beautiful. I get teased a lot by my fellow musicians because they just know when something is particularly glorious, if they hand me a tissue, so I'll be over there weeping. I'm like, I can't be weeping. I've got to play next, you know? But there's something so holy in the music itself. And so any music can be played poorly. Every musical experience is not necessarily going to be a holy one. But I think people resonate with intention as well as outcome. So it's pretty clear that this group is committed to what we're doing. And we're committed to the music. That's the biggest thing. So it's not about who we are. It's not about who I am. My personality is only so useful, after all, and mostly a hindrance. So I think that people resonate to truth wherever they find it. So something is true at the heart of the music. And if we can be an apt vehicle for delivering that, then we're all very grateful for that opportunity. And I also believe that, I mean, this actually happened when I was giving some announcements at this concert on Sunday. I made mention of the fact, well, first of all, Island Concert has just been taken up by Whidbey Island Arts Council. So we are now part of their 501c3 umbrella, making us nonprofit, which is amazing. Now that we're in our second year of creating our musical organization, now we have the support to become an organizational organization. We have this organizational aegis under which we can operate, which gives us that structural stability, which is amazing. We don't have enough oomph yet to have our own 501c3 process. I was thinking about it, but we're not there yet. And so to be able to take donations on the behalf of this music so we can, for example, buy period instruments or do workshops is just a glorious factor. So I was announcing our coming under the WEAC umbrella, and I made mention of the fact that all of Island Concert's members are Whidbey residents, and a cheer went up in the audience. And that's another thing. Islanders love their Islanders. There is a rich array of artists and musicians and actors and all of these beautiful arts forms here. There's also a richness of people who appreciate and love and support it. So there's something just really right about Whidbey musicians making music on Whidbey. Now, those of us who really want to make our lives as musicians do have to do work off island to make a living, it seems, for the most part. And so part of what I'm also doing, is trying to change that a little bit to create greater streams of awareness for what it takes to be a professional musician, the amount of hours that goes into one's personal practice, and then the rehearsal time. I mean, I'm always in rehearsal. I'm always in rehearsal if I'm at home and practicing. Always. And people don't believe me when they say, well, hey, in June, can you, like, nope, I'll be in rehearsal. Well, how do you know that? Well, look at my Google Calendar. I have to be in rehearsal because I've got a performance that next day. That's just how it is. And when we try to bring our own integrity to something, I mean, we also have to, you know, eat and pay our bills. And so by doing these chamber concerts at Wicca, by creating this other chamber series through Island Consort, I'm really just trying to increase the profile of local music as a viable art form for the musicians as well as for what I think it brings to the community.
That is incredible. And thank you for doing that. And kind of wrapping up the interview a little bit, what advice would you give to aspiring musicians?
Make music. You know, there's no guarantees in this life, regardless of who you are or where you live. But you're not a musician if you're not making music. You could be a suffering potential musician or a suppressed musician. But if music is the gift given to you by this beautiful universe of ours. It's like if you're a writer, write. If you're a gardener, garden. If you're a mother, mother. You know, if you're hungry, eat. It's really no different. If you, you know, chop wood, carry water, this is our work to do. We all have our gifts and our graces as well as our challenges. And there's just no way around the fact that the work is there for us to do. It's there to be done. So just make the music. Trust yourself. Always do what you love.
That's, again, beautifully well said. So what are some of the highlights that people can look forward to for this concert that's coming up at 2 p.m. This Sunday at Whidbey Island Center for the Arts?
This is a really big program. I'm very excited about it. It's mostly a delve into the classical era. There will be a Haydn string quartet. I'm doing Mozart's piano quartet in G minor. And it was the first, that quartet is the first piano quartet in the repertoire. The first significant piano quartet ever written in the repertoire. And it's an amazing piece of music. It is Mozart after all, so it's kind of destined for greatness. I'm doing Beethoven's Spring Sonata, a bar for violin and piano. That one is played by violinist Brian Kenny. And then we're wrapping that concert up with a Hummel piano trio. Hummel was a contemporary of Beethoven's, but kind of went in a different direction. And there was a little bit of rancor, I believe, that I think was sort of resolved by the time of Beethoven's death. Hummel sort of went in the track more of the Chopin Liszt camp, where Beethoven, I think, gave way more into the Schumann camp. It's a stormy piece of music based on a Russian folk song for piano, cello, and flute. But we're opening the concert with a Bach keyboard and violin sonata, which wasn't originally on the program, but a violinist I'm working with, Cynthia Morrow, and I loved it so much. She's a member of the consort and is playing the Haydn as well. Decided we should just add it on as a wonderful way to open and set the stage, because, of course, the High Baroque was a precursor to the early classical and the later classical era. So this is going to be a really big and juicy program, assuming I can get through it all. It's a lot of work, actually. It's a big program for a pianist. And then after that, I'm playing, you know, Carmina Burana with the orchestra in March, but that's really nothing to chap my hide. In April, I have a night of Piano Fest. So the opening night of Piano Fest, which I believe is April 22nd, I'm featuring piano duets and two piano works on the first half, with pianists Kathy Fox, Mark Finley, Diane Vars, and myself. But then my feature portion of that program is the second half, and I'm actually featuring not so much the piano and certainly not myself, but the compositions of local and regional composers. I'm extremely excited. So I'll be performing works by James Hinckley, solo piano preludes by James Hinckley, local cellist that we all love, who's also a member of the Island Consort. And I'm going to play a set of music by Angelique Poteet, who was an island girl made good. She went off. She lives in Seattle now, but she's quite a renowned national composer and clarinetist. She's had quite some acclaim with her compositions. I'm playing a piano suite of hers. Then James Hinckley and I are playing a cello piano sonata of hers. And then she's going to join me on the stage with my violinist friend, Cynthia, who also plays viola, to do a Poteet trio. This is tremendous music. And then I'm doing a couple of works by Alan Hovhaannis, who was not originally from here at all. I believe he was Estonian. Please forgive me if I'm misremembering. But he settled in Seattle eventually and is much beloved in the Seattle community. And he's passed on now. But I'm doing a piano sonata by Hovhaannis and then a cello piano sonata. And then to cap that evening off, I'm going to be creating a piece of music potentially right then and there with local guitarist Troy Chapman of Pearl Django and the Troy Chapman Group. And Troy, as a matter of fact, has also joined Island Consort. He took up the Baroque guitar to play with Island Consort. That was really quite delicious. So that's April 22nd. And on April 26th is our Island Consort Bach program. And then in May, I'm doing... Island Consort is holding a Schubertiad at Wicca on May 23rd, I want to say. It's an all-Schubert program. There's the instrumental octet, which is the whole first half of the program. It's an hour-long piece of music. And then the second half will be the Trout Quintet by Schubert. And I have a soloist who is potentially going to be singing some of Schubert's Lieder, but she's having surgery in early April. So we're assuming she's on the May program, but we don't know. So those are the highlights of the rest of my and Island Consort's season. Now, this violinist, Cynthia Morrow, I want to mention again because she and I have created a new duo, a violin-piano duo called Dauphin Musique. We just played the piano bar at Wicca the other night. We'll be doing some recording of Mozart and Bach and then romantic gems. We'll be doing probably a gypsy series of music coming up in the summer. We have all kinds of tricks up our sleeve yet to be revealed. So I have an awful lot going on.
Congratulations. That sounds,
thank you.
Sounds amazing. And so in order to get tickets for this Sunday's concert, you can go to wiccaonline.org. And to learn more about Island Consort, visit islandconsort.org. There's a contact form there where you can sign up to learn more about what Sheila's up to. And then also hop over to Facebook and like Island Consort and learn more about their concerts. Their concert, tongue twister a little bit. And thank you so much for being the first guest on this podcast. This was wonderful.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you for having me, Katie.